If I hurt you, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to lose my head. And if I made you cry, I'm sorry. It was just another foolish quarrel. Won't you end it with a kiss? And remember this. Except the time I said I love you.
Yes. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. This is Virginia Reed with A Woman's Perspective. We are on Progressive Radio Network. PRNCOMM.net. We have a really interesting program this morning. As you know, this is a kind of intelligent persons magazine format program where we touch on lots of different topics, whether it's medicine, politics, healings, alternative therapies, musicians. The beautiful singer you just heard was Champion Fulton. She was heard on this program and she will be back. She's got such an interesting bio behind her. Young woman, 22 years old. You can hear her here in New York right now. Plus her new CD's coming out. I've done lots of great nights dancing to her music with some of her players in the background. So this morning, we have Amy Burke with us. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you.
Amy is a biogeometric integrative chiropractor. And Amy, on the really the forefront, you know, we hear chiropractor. All right, what's a chiropractor? We used to think, don't go to a chiropractor. They don't, you know, they do these mysterious things to the body. Well, we've discovered over the last 20, 30 years, those of you who are in the field of alternatives, and actually mainstream at this point, are coming to understand that chiropractic is such a vital part of our preventive medicine program, as well as helping us to heal from short-term and long-term issues in our anatomy, particularly related to the spine. Now, Amy Burke has taught internationally. She actually spent a spade in Italy. How long were you in Italy?
I practiced for 2 years in Parma, Italy.
In Parma, Italy. Why'd you choose to go to Parma, Italy?
Best food in the world.
Best food in the world. That'll do it. And Amy, you've what? You've studied at a chiropractic institute that wasn't biogeometric. What's that? Tell us a little about that evolution in your studies. And
I went to chiropractic college. I graduated in 1999, and I went to chiropractic college really thinking that I was going to find an alternative medical approach to people who had spinal issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very surprised and somewhat blown away when I got there and realized that chiropractic is such a much bigger world. And it's really an evolutionary approach to healthcare. And for me, chiropractic is not about preventative medicine. It's not about any kind of medicine. It's really an evolutionary approach to a person's development and being and essence. And as I was graduating, what we learn in school is so much of a medicalized approach. It's just what we have to learn to pass our boards and get through the program, and I was really looking for a mentor. And I had the grace of finding this woman who is a mentor in every way to so many people, and this approach to chiropractic is truly at the forefront. And
who is the woman?
Her name is Sue Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Her practice is in Carroll Stream, Illinois. And what I love about Sue Brown is that she lives and breathes in integrity. She is truly constantly learning and discovering new things and brings that to us. Mm-hmm. In her work and in the way she lives. And so for me, it was a perfect match. I was looking for somebody that could teach me how to be in the world as well as how to have my hands on people in a really meaningful way, because mm-hmm. in school it's so clinicalized.
Mm-hmm.
I had been a massage therapist for 10 years.
Oh, interesting background, yeah.
So I knew bodies, and mm-hmm. I knew that I knew them, and I knew that I was good at that. And I feel like that has been a of great benefit to the people that I serve, because when I put my hands on them, I have a really deep sense of who they are and where they've been just by touching.
Yes. Did you do your massage practice here in New York? Or
I did it in California.
In California. Mm-hmm. So you were born in California.
I was born and raised.
Yes. Do you think the fact that California seems to be the origin of so many of the alternative approaches, that that was an influence of any sort on you?
I think it must have been. I knew that I wanted to be in a world that was not Western medicine. Part of me was very attracted to the concept of going to medical school, mm-hmm. so that I could have the MD and then become a chiropractor, an osteopath, a homeopath, whatever I decided. And then I felt like I was giving in to the man, mm-hmm. By giving up 4 years of my life in order to study something to get validated. And what I really needed to do was embrace what I was learning and validate it myself. And that's what I've done. And I'm so grateful,
yes.
to have saved not only that time, but to really have delved into my studies and embraced them fully.
Hmm. And when you say chiropractic traditionally is a medicalized profession, what are you talking about there?
Okay, so let me be a little bit, let me back up a little bit. Traditionally, chiropractic, the founder of chiropractic 100 years ago, his goal was to reconnect man the physical with man the spiritual. That was the profound bottom line of chiropractic when it was originated.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime in the middle of this century, it was after World War II, chiropractors wanted to get involved in the insurance business. And so they needed to find codes, and they needed to find problems that they could fix so that they could bill for them.
Mm.
And it became a method of treatment for the obvious was back pain, because we focus so much on the spine. But truly, chiropractic, in the first chiropractic adjustment that was delivered was actually delivered to a man who had lost his hearing in a horse accident. And the founder of chiropractic, D.D. Palmer, did an adjustment on the man's thoracic spine, and his hearing returned.
Mm.
And so for years, all of the deaf people came to get healed from their deafness. And mm-hmm. for some people that worked, for those people that had a spinal injury that had created the deafness, they received some benefit. For other people, they noticed that that a variety of issues resolved, whether it was asthma, whether it was headaches, whether it was allergies to food. And so the founder of chiropractic realized that he wasn't curing anything, but rather he was releasing the body's ability to heal itself.
Mm.
And so for me, I like to get back and back and back to that traditional approach, whereas mm-hmm. I feel like somewhere in the middle, which is really not the traditional approach, we got placed into a world where we were meeting diagnostic codes and performing procedures that could be reimbursed by insurance policies so that we could make a living without really telling people what we do. And mm-hmm. for me, what I do is truly release people's potential that is stored in their bodies so that they can truly live their lives. And mm-hmm. what that means on a person-to-person basis is completely different. For some people, it's helping them with their back pain. For others, it's headaches. For others, it's their relationships, their relationship to food, their relationship to money, their relationship to their parents. It's all based on patterning. As we start to shift those old patterns, people's relationships to every aspect of their lives changes. It's a cellular to cellular shift. It's a person to person shift. It's a how am I in my world shift.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love and what gets me out of bed in the morning is that people may come in because they're experiencing physical issues and they feel like they have heard that chiropractic might help for that, whether it's asthma or back pain or headaches or mm-hmm. whatever. And they keep coming because they feel like so much of their life has shifted and grown and changed as a result of the work that we have that we do together.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's just truly inspiring to walk into my office and learn what has shifted for the people in my practice that day or that week. And it's so fun to hear the stories.
Yeah. Now, I'm also in the holistic field, shall we say, and I look at patterns in terms of body movement patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And as president of the Laban Institute of Movement Studies, a nonprofit, educative, research, and artistic institute, we train people to view the patterns. One of the things we also do is teach a body therapy, which is called Bartenya Fundamentals, on the same line as Alexander Technique, Feldenkrais approach. And I'm always interested in hearing and interviewing people who also look at patterns. And what are the patterns you're looking at when someone comes in? I'm hearing that, hey, I can go to Amy if I'm having problems in my relationship. Is that true? Or do I come to you mostly with a body issue? Western medicine said, what's the problem? Not necessarily a whole human being coming to you and saying, hi, and I just want to be what? Around you? I hear you're a healer generally. What's the language people use when they do come to you? Are they kind of stuck in the stereotypes of, well, chiropractor is like a doctor, but they're not quite a doctor. A lot of them wear white coats and they're insurance covered, so I'm going to be free. I know I'm asking a lot here, but what do they approach you with? Will someone come in saying, I need spiritual healing, Amy?
I have really had just about everything walk in, and the way my practice runs, I don't wear a white coat. No one calls me doctor. I listen to lounge music as I'm adjusting. I adjust in a group setting. We have beautiful pictures on the wall. There is no way that somebody could mistake my office for a traditional doctor, dentist, or even a traditional chiropractic office. So when people come in, they may be coming, as I said, because they have that traditional issue, whether it's back pain or a slip disc, or they feel like they don't have enough energy. Although, really, my practice is referral-based.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people will say to a friend or a loved one, you should go see Amy, and here's why. And it may be related absolutely nothing to their physical symptomatology. Mm-hmm. And for me, the symptoms are just truly a message from our body. And somewhere I read something that was a beautiful quote that said, the body speaks as loud as it needs to until we listen.
Mm-hmm.
And so very few people come in symptom free, realistically. I mean, we live in New York. We're all running so hard and so fast, mm-hmm. and to our next thing. And
physical symptom free.
Yes, mm-hmm. correct. So generally, people come in because they've got something going on. But I try on the first visit to really flesh out that body, mind, spirit, emotional connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, I'm seeing that even in the title of your work, it's Biogeometric Integration. Now, integration can be viewed on many levels. Here you're saying the spiritual, the body, the emotional, if I may. People come in with body pain. You're saying every cell in the body is a spiritual, physical, emotional pattern interweaving with other cells, and somehow your body with its symptoms suddenly feels pain, hip pain, ankle pain, headache pain, and they're saying, hey, I don't want to go through the traditional medical approach. What are you going to do, Amy? Are you going to just talk to me for a while, looking at my talk patterns? Are you going to palpate? Are you going to, what do you call on in yourself? And then my next thought is, hey, if I start to tell you about, with tears in my eyes, my relationship isn't going well, I'm really tense, are you qualified in the, quote, traditional, or are you allowed with even your alternative approach to help me with my feelings? Have you studied patterns of feeling through a psychodynamic or sociodynamic perspective?
Those are great questions. Let me go back a little bit and talk a little bit about how I communicate with people when they first come in. And the way I explain my approach is that we are constantly being inundated with input, whether it's auditory, visual, sensory, chemical, emotional, physical, spiritual. It's all coming in all the time. And our brain does an incredible job at filtering that information.
Mm-hmm.
And making physiological changes based on that information.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, the way I experience bodies is that based on the input, we are able to either process that bit of information and learn and grow from it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And some pieces of information are big. They are traumatic events that happen when we're children. They're traumatic events that happens as adult. They are ongoing bothersome episodes, whether it's our bad posture, our bad nutrition, our bad thought patterns,
mm-hmm.
And each of those things will lay a track in our body. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine it like a track of music. You can imagine it like a physical track, like almost like a spider web. Mm-hmm. And it will go through the body. And for me, that is an unintegrated piece of information. That is a piece of information that our body wasn't able to process when it came in. Whether it was because there was too much information at one time, because there was too much going on at that moment, whether it was too big a piece of information, mm-hmm. or whether it was so trivial seeming that our body didn't actually process it. I believe that we are all exactly where we're supposed to be at exactly the right moment to learn what we're supposed to learn at that moment to create who we are, mm-hmm. and who we're supposed to become. So each bit of that information is very important, and I believe that our body holds on to it so that we can process it eventually, and it will become part of who we are in our human experience. Mm-hmm. In an idealized world, we would all have mechanisms and know how to process these leftover bits of information, but I feel like we live in a culture that's so disconnected from our bodies in general, and I know you experienced that with the Laban work, mm-hmm. that we don't necessarily have that ability to process it. So it gets stored. And sometimes I use an analogy like a file cabinet, that I'm just going through your old file cabinets and asking your body, is this file something that you need right now? And if it's not, let's just get the information and then let's toss it. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes it's like going through a bunch of post-it notes. And at the beginning of the week, my desk is clean. And by the end of the week, I've got bills I've got to pay. I've got phone calls to return. I've got filing I've got to do. And that's how bodies are. And as we accumulate and grow and age and develop, we are accumulating stuff. We're accumulating experiences. Some of them are emotional. Some of them are physical. Some of them are spiritual. Some of them are chemical. Mm-hmm. And so what my job as a chiropractor is to assess that body and listen to its music and find out what pieces are stuck, what pieces aren't playing fully, and release that through the system so that each cell can play its full extent.
Could you give us a really specific example? Say I come to you with a lot of pain in my right hip, mm-hmm. and I've done a lot of dancing, I'm a past athlete, etc., did marathons. What would you do with me? Well, let's play that out a little.
So we talk a little bit about your history. So mm-hmm. I'd learn a little bit more about that. I'd like to know when the hip pain started. Not mm-hmm. not so much for a medicalized approach to find mm-hmm. out the how, when, and why, but to find out if there's any emotional issues or any big issues that you can associate with that time.
Yes.
I have a client who I adore who came in and told me that for the last 2 years that every aspect of her left side had been developing more and more pain. And I said, did anything interesting happen 2 years ago? And she said that her father had died and her best friend had been murdered. Mm. And she said, I have been to 50 doctors and no one has ever asked me that question. Mm. And so with her, I did a physical adjustment, which for me what that means is I will either sit you up, I feel your system, I tell you what I'm feeling, I feel for places that are out of sync with each other. Mm-hmm. I find, speaking about women in particular, I find that a lot of women are disconnected at their pelvis, mm-hmm. whether it's because there are so many issues, whether it's because they've had a baby recently and are afraid of becoming pregnant again, whether it's because they don't want to be pregnant, whether they're afraid of the possibility of becoming pregnant, whether they're afraid of being truly sexually engaged mm-hmm. in our world and what that means to them as a professional. Does it mean that they're somehow sexualizing their being? There's so many issues that yes. we as women carry around, and some of it is cultural, some of it is tribal, and it mm-hmm. has a very different energetic feel to it. Sometimes we're carrying around our ancestors' stuff and not even aware that we're holding on to it.
Mm-hmm. Like?
Like past incest, abuse, mm-hmm. Generational stuff that passes mm-hmm. through energetically from one to another. Mm-hmm. A mother's complete disconnection from her body can be absolutely translated to her children. So when I'm working with children, I also like to see the parents because I want to know where it's coming from, if in mm-hmm. fact there's a connection, because I can work and clear those patterns in the child. But then if they're going back into the environment of their household where there's mm-hmm. this family dynamic and nothing has shifted except exactly. for the child, they walk in the door and there the pattern comes back in
yes.
again.
Well, it's sort of like a family therapy approach where formerly we blame the child for the symptoms, and now family therapists often don't even see the child. They go right to the parents.
Right.
But you're certainly encompassing a very broad scope here, and where you make your interventions and how, probably, hopefully a dozen, but could lead to potential issues legally. We compartmentalize in not only our medical field, all fields. We reduce symptoms to specifics. Your internist handles this, your family practitioner this, your osteopath that, and self, not osteopath is more alternative, but hand specialist, etc. And here you're taking in so much. Have you ever run into any problems on that score?
I haven't. And part of the reason is because I'm very clear with people that I'm not there to fix anything.
Mm-hmm.
No one in my practice is broken. Nobody, I truly believe that none of us are broken. We all carry around our story and our history. And so for me, really what my service to people is to listen to their body and to hear what pieces are not feeling heard or aren't completed, and to allow that person to see that or to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a very, most of the time, it's a very subtle experience, and it's not particularly dramatic. It's not particularly emotional. I don't do talk therapy. I don't diagnose anything.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to say that your pelvis is disconnected, it's not a clinical diagnosis. I'm not suggesting that there's any type of pathology.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very clear to people that if they feel like there's a pathological process, that I am not the person that will give them a diagnosis or a treatment.
Mm-hmm.
My work is not about treating people. It's about meeting people where they are and connecting with them and allowing them to connect back in their body. Almost everything that we do on a regular basis is disconnecting us from our body. So mm-hmm. I feel like part of the service that I offer to people is just really to touch base with themselves, whether mm-hmm. it's on a physical or emotional level. I have not ever had any issues with people being confused as to what my service is. I have Kleenex in every room, and I tell people that because we're going through various layers, some of the patterns are emotional, some of them are physical, some of them are chemical, that a variety of releases can happen. Sometimes it's an emotional release, sometimes it can involve tears, it can involve grief, it can involve sadness.
Mm-hmm.
For other people, their nose will start running, their eyes will start running, other people break out into a sweat, and it's the body detoxing. And whether it's an emotional detox or a physical detox, for me it doesn't matter. And mm-hmm. I'm really clear that I'm not there to label what they're experiencing, and
but
I'm not there to fix
yeah,
it.
Go ahead. You're not there to fix it. I might take umbrage if you're calling my pelvis disconnected, for instance. That is a kind of a value there in that word. And I don't mean to trip you up here, but if you tell me my pelvis is disconnected or your head's disconnected from your body, I mean, that's already in the language. The body starts at the neck down. No, the head is also the body. So our language gets us into some problems. If I left your office thinking, gee, my pelvis is disconnected, I'm going to start obsessing about my disconnected pelvis and how do I reconnect it? What exercises can you give me? What do I need to do here? We're a doing and action-oriented culture. You're talking about a very subtle kind of healing where it could be existing on, as you talk about, cellular level. So are you having any difficulty with language then? If you're saying you're not judging, how do you speak to your clients? I mean, is it the language you're talking now and as you're describing your feel?
It is quite very, very much the language I'm using now, and I'm laughing because when I detect that somebody is an obsessive personality, and I mean that in a really general way, and certainly we find that more in New York than we do in Parma, I will do my best to really neutralize the language. And yet we live in a culture where people like to be told what's wrong with them.
Yeah.
So that's always fascinating to me because I find the whole process fascinating that we go somewhere where somebody tells us what's wrong with us. They don't necessarily tell us how to quote unquote fix it, but people really like being read and being told what's wrong with them. And so I really try to avoid that. But I do have people tap into that sense of that there may be a disconnection between the pelvis and the legs. And does that make sense to you? Does it make sense to you that you may have experienced some trauma in your pelvis, whether it's emotional or physical, that your body may have just said, you know what, this is too much for me to deal with. I can't take it anymore. And so I'm just going to check out. And so what my goal as your chiropractor is to help you check back in, to help your body check back in. And for most people, just hearing those words that we're going to reconnect your body with your pelvis is such a relief. Mm-hmm. I really find that most people experience much more of a relief rather than a concern. And it may just be my delivery too.
Yeah. So we're going to take a little break. And let's think, there's so much I want to ask you. I want to hear more about why biogeometric. What is the implicit meaning there? I want to know, getting back into this issue of the disconnect, reconnecting, the emotional piece involved in that, and how all-encompassing your practice really is. It sounds so interesting, Amy.
Thank you.
Okay, let's take a little music break, and let's connect our body and mind. A deep breath, little movement in the shoulders, the arms, smile on the face, up those T and white cell counts with laughter. Be back shortly.
Be soft, be sweet, but be discreet. Don't go off your beat. He's too close for comfort. Close for comfort, please, not again. Too close to know just when to say when. Be firm, be fair, be absolutely sure, beware. On your guard, take care. Such temptation. One thing leads to another. Too late to run for cover. He's much too close for comfort.
You are listening to Virginia Reed on A Woman's Perspective, PRNCOMM.net. That's Progressive Radio Network, community.net. We do have a toll-free studio number, 888-873-4643. Yes. Now, back with Amy Burke, a fascinating woman who seems to have it together, and I mean that on a few levels. It's wonderful to hear a practitioner really integrate in their language. You've done a lot of thinking, and you've made the big swing from a pure physical medical approach, considering becoming a medical doctor, exploring, having what I think is one of the most amazing histories in terms of actually doing hands-on massage. That's a whole field that I must get somebody in here to talk about from the general perspective. You, Amy, I just don't want to have so many other questions to ask you. I'm not going to stop with it, but it's one of the most intimate, important interactions in a non-touching culture that we
Absolutely.
Exist in this concrete cities that we're all inhabiting, where there's nothing connecting to our bodies, not even the earth. It's sort of, we bounce off it and we hurt our joints walking and all kinds of stuff. But I'm curious, Amy, what biogeometric integration means as opposed to, yeah, I'm a chiropractor. What are you adding to this in addition to what you've spoken of earlier? Why biogeometric?
That's a great question. The bio relates to our approach to a living system. Geometric connects to the geometry of living systems. And my mentor, Sue Brown, who I mentioned earlier, was doing this work unbeknownst to her. I mean, she was just doing her thing. And so many people asked her to please teach them what she was doing. And so she slightly begrudgingly sat down and mapped out what she was doing and found that there was a consistent geometrical approach to what she was doing. And it is based on a series of triangles, tetrahedrons, fractal biology or fractal geometry, fractal patterns that relate through the whole body. And so for me, when I'm talking about a physical structure and a person's talking about their hip, say, for me, I instantly have a picture of how that hip is geometrically correlated to the shoulders, to the first bone of your cervical spine, mm-hmm. to the base of your neck, and to the middle of your rib cage or bottom of your rib cage, top of your lumbar vertebra. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes that's a great place to start with people, because a lot of times people will come in and say, I've got this, 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 and this going on.
Yes.
And it's all geometrically correlated. And so mm-hmm. when I can explain that to people, they like that. It's a place to hang our hat. And so much of what I talk about seems sort of ethereal that sometimes it's really nice to bring it down to that physical, visual, geometric approach.
Absolutely. Attesting again to the fact that you're integrating many sides of this. You know, Rudolf Laban instituted what's called the studies of space harmony and looked at the sacred solids from the early geometry and saw our body very much right down to the very viruses within as forms that are living forms, icosahedral, tetrahedral. And that was just one of the big draws for me in learning the theories of movement, basing it in the living geometry, not the static textbook two-dimensional mathematical picture of a tetrahedron, but looking at someone leaping with arms out at shoulder level, etc., and where you can use these forms partly as ways of seeing and ordering your vision. And indeed, our energy itself is ordered in geometric-like forms, as well as the fractal, which gives us a whole other seemingly random approach to viewing phenomena, but really isn't. So that's fascinating, and I love the word integration. I want to get into as well some of your specialties. You had said to me that you work a lot with pregnant women. Ages, I know women are getting pregnant much later. Some are getting pregnant at 14, not necessarily only here in America, but globally, 13. What do you specifically deal with, and give us an example, if you can, of how you would work with an issue that someone brought to you?
Absolutely. It is truly my favorite thing to come into my office and work with pregnant women. I feel like the process of pregnancy is in physical manifestation of this concept of divine action. Mm-hmm. Because to me, there is no way that two cells could meet each other and then create this incredible being with all of our cells, all of our capacities, with no effort on our part as the mother and creator. And to me, there is clearly some other, I don't know whether it's God or divine or some, it's fabulous. And so for me to be a chiropractor and have somebody come in as that miracle process is occurring in their body and say, I need help, whether it's physical discomfort, I'm having back pain, I need help, my baby's breech, and I really don't want to have a C-section. Is there anything that we can do to turn the baby? I need help. I'm at 40 weeks. My OB wants to demand that I have a C-section. Is there anything that you can help me do to start labor that's non-invasive and isn't going to hurt me, isn't going to hurt the baby? Mm-hmm. These are all issues that have walked into my office in the last week.
EGADS, that's a lot.
It's so fun. Each
How
one.
Do you deal with a breech baby?
The same way I deal with anything else. I am looking for tension that is stored in the pelvis. And as we release that tension, babies know where they need to go. And what's really interesting about breech babies is there's, in my experience, there's two kind. There's mechanical breech babies and there's emotional breech babies. the mechanical babies keep trying to go down, and they actually get turned in the proper direction, and then there's a barrier. So whether there's an actual misalignment in the pelvis, which is just preventing there to be enough space for them to be there, or the cord is twisted up in some way, or the ligaments are too tight so that there's actually not room, they kind of go head down and then bounce back up. Those are all mechanical breaches, and they can quite easily be addressed through this type of work. As we release the patterns of tension through the pelvis, oftentimes people will... I've had a couple people that have turned on their own. I've had a lot of people that have actually gone for their external version, and the OB puts their hands on the baby, and the baby turns down with no effort on the obstetrician's part. And those I almost like better, because mm-hmm. it's just so unlikely. So those are great. And the satisfaction for both me and the mom and the dad and the doula and the whole birthing team is just so fantastic. The other type of breech baby I find is more common, I think, in our culture here in New York mm-hmm. than elsewhere. And I don't know that I'm speaking in turn there, because I haven't had that much experience elsewhere, but there is the older mother who's mm-hmm. coming, who has a phenomenal career, who has accomplished so much in her life and is incredibly successful at so many things. And there's a huge concern, you know, I've got the career down, I've got the money thing down, I've got the house down, I've got all these things down. I don't know if I'm going to be able to be a mom. Mm-hmm. And so there's that deep fear and deep concern, and it creates a very edgy atmosphere for the baby. And the baby will actually go as far up to get as close to the mom's heartbeat mm-hmm. as possible, to get to the most comforting place, and also to give the mom enough time to dive into that moment of, okay, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And so the emotional breaches in some way they're more complicated, because there's not a mechanical difficulty that I can address on a physical mm-hmm. level, but sometimes just even being addressed and acknowledged mm-hmm. that this is a possibility, this is something I see, and this isn't something that I can help you with other than to be here and let you know that you are going to be an amazing mother, mm-hmm. that this baby picked you because you are the perfect mother and the perfect father, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's enough for mm-hmm. the baby really for the mom to let go into mm-hmm. motherhood, and then for the baby to drop into that.
Mm. And I'm sure it helps for you, because you have given birth, yes?
Yes, it helps. I always felt like I believed everything I said, and felt it so deeply and so passionately, and yet there was one little piece that rang empty for me, and mm-hmm. I was almost always afraid that somebody might see the real truth about me, that I didn't really mm-hmm. know what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And so having had not only an amazing marriage and husband, but to have a beautiful child come out of that has mm-hmm. just been the biggest gift.
Wow, so wonderful, Amy, and that, it's very moving. You are a true model of working steadily and deeply on integrating yourself, that infinite journey that doesn't quite ever arrive, but you're pretty far along the continuum. What a great model for the clients that do come to you and for you, and that you can both comfort on the simplest level, just because in your being and as you're speaking even today and listening, there's so much that's incorporated. And I know that so much goes on even in the quiet of two people looking at each other. There's a multitude of conversations going on without words. So I sure recommend to the listening audience, men, women, and children, that you might find some help, if you haven't so far, with other practitioners, to give Amy Burke a ring. Amy, I'm also very interested in cultural aspects of behavior. There are things that are pretty far out of our ken, like if we're in Italy. You know, doing family therapy in Italy is such a different journey from doing family therapy in Germany or in New York. How these systems interplay And there has to be a certain amount of observation, study, and knowledge to treat people in many from different cultures, because we can get into our own sort of tight interpretations based on our own language and categories and so forth. I'm happy to hear you worked in Parma, Italy. I often suggest it to my students at NYU and creative arts therapies when they ask, well, what would be good experiences for me? I'd say any culture. Go down to Puerto Rico for a summer. Learn the music, the language. Feel how very different people that look just like you and me behave in total different ways. Preferably also go to Romania. Go wherever you can to understand what's seen as the other. And I'd love to hear a little bit about what's different in Parma from New York in terms of working with people.
Parma was, excuse me, Parma was an extraordinary experience on many levels, and it was really personally a triumph to be able to have that experience, because it was so complex to be able to get a visa.
Oh,
and so that was just,
speaking of tangibles, yes,
it was just my truly my will created that, and so to be there and to serve people in Parma was extraordinary, and it was really interesting. There was one other chiropractor in Parma, and he had a much more medicalized approach. People went to him because they were broken, and he fixed them, and he was incredibly good at that. But in general, chiropractic wasn't a part of the culture. So when you first mentioned how chiropractic has become part of our, really part of our dictionary of what we do for ourselves in our culture, chiropractic was not in their dictionary. And so what that allowed, it gave me the opportunity to give my story as the only story. And so when people, I'd like to think that when they go to a chiropractor in Parma, they have heard of the chiropractic approach that I brought.
Mm-hmm.
However, because there was no cultural knowledge of it, we really were starting from scratch. So every conversation was, now what is that? What do you do? And mm-hmm. sometimes it became a little bit heavy just to have to start over again every time. But the thing I found about Parma that was, not about Parma, but about Northern Italy, is that people were in some ways more disconnected from their bodies than we are. And yet there is such a corporal sense of physicality in Italy that in some ways people were more connected. And so it was this really funny dichotomy. And I'm not sure I ever really was able to make the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when the opportunity arose for me to be able to move to New York, I sort of had felt like I had hit a wall in Parma and not knowing how to get over it, and that it was really going to involve me setting kind of permanent roots down and being committed to being there 100% in order to get over that wall. And when the opportunity came to move here, I did.
Mm-hmm.
And yet my office is still there in Parma, and there's a wonderful chiropractor who's there offering incredible work to people there. So it was funny, though. People in Parma, and this is just good for a little laugh, everything stemmed from their liver.
That's their take.
That's their take. Or the window was open. And so either they had cancer because they had slept with the window open, or they had blocked their digestion because they had drank a glass of cold milk. And it was one of those things where they were looking at me with these big eyes, you know, please help me. And I couldn't get there because I was still thinking, are they kidding? And yet it was such a big part of the culture.
Yes.
And so I thought, if I could just come up with a cure to be able to help people with congestione, which is this blockage of the stomach that you get when you drink cold milk, but it doesn't happen when you eat gelato. So that's what's very confusing to me. Then I would have people coming out of my ears in my practice.
So interesting. Gelato is pleasure and milk is duty.
That's right.
And I'm also fascinated with the liver because it's about living the liver. And perhaps in Italian, I'm curious what the word in Italian.
Fegato.
Fegato. Oh, you got a great accent. That is our essentially our filter system and garbage. And yeah, if your liver's clear, it does heal a lot. So going with some of that, I'm sure you did, but working backwards up to this amazing body of knowledge that other, certainly in New York, we come into any practitioner speaking a lot of healing language. Many people's a great sophistication here. And you're so right. And my trips through Italy and teaching in Italy, boy, at any opportunity we'd break out singing. There was a joy in interaction because people are sad too, and they go 100% with the tears and 100% with the fury and the gestures. So when I hear disconnect, I don't know. I mean, is a really connected person a perfect statue of geometry and whatever? No, it's also about the aliveness in the face, the liveliness in the voice, and maybe the right shoulder is much higher than the left and the right knee is this. What always fascinated me in my practice is how people compensate for whatever it is they do. And if we're talking just the pure physical language and analyzing the movement patterns, that I wonder if you bring that notion into your work, how fascinating to see how they do live their lives in their body, and they're not in pain, and they're not coming for a bunion that's hurting, because their bunion doesn't hurt, and they're using their foot so fully, and the other side compensates, etc.
Absolutely, and that's when I talk about people not being broken, and people come in and say, now I think my posture is funny, mm-hmm. or I know I should sit up straighter, and I always tell people, you shouldn't sit up straighter. You should acknowledge that your posture is coming from every experience that you've ever had, and it's a protective device.
Yes.
And as we start to release those patterns which have created this protection for you and have served you in protecting you, but you no longer need them, your posture is going to change mm-hmm. naturally. Your gait is going to change. And so whether your right shoulder is high or low matters not to me. But to find how that delicate balance of posture and balance is what moves me. Mm-hmm. And the same with symptomatology. We live in a culture where we think that if we don't have symptoms, we're healthy. And yet we all know somebody who was perfectly healthy, quote unquote, one day and woke up the next day and either found out they had stage 4 cancer or died of a heart attack. And so were they really healthy? No, probably not. Mm-hmm. But we comfort ourselves by thinking that the lack of symptoms means that we're healthy, whereas we get very uncomfortable when people are sick. I just left my daughter at home throwing up. Mm-hmm. And most people would think, oh, she's sick, but my perspective is I am so glad that her body is strong enough and smart enough to know that whatever's in there doesn't belong, and so it's doing its darndest to get it out from yes. every direction. And yes, she's uncomfortable and she feels sad and I'm sad for her, but it is a beautiful process and her body is incredible. So what am I going to do? Give her Pepto-Bismol mm-hmm. so that we can stop her up from both sides and then keep that inside longer and then deal with colon cancer when she's 50.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the body is so expressive and it is meant to express. And so for me, it's not about the lack of symptomatology and it's not about balance being an equilibrium where nothing changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's about experiencing the symptoms and acknowledging that they're part of health and they're part of the process of being a healthy being. That if we have a cold, if we're exposed to a virus that lives in our nose, the smartest thing that our body is going to do is to create a river that's going to take that out. And that happens on in every aspect of our physical being, is
yes.
that the symptomatology makes sense. And if we give our body the acknowledgement that it is so brilliant and so smart and knows how to do this, and that we're truly along for the ride and we're just living in this mm-hmm. this gift for this lifetime, that that the pressure really relieves is so much easier to live in a mm-hmm. body knowing that these processes are welcomed.
Yeah, I think the Merck and Glaxo police are going to be waiting outside the door of the studio.
Won't be the first time.
Won't be the first time. Because you better buy Pepto-Bismol and support your culture. And those who are invested in Merck, I'm sorry, but Amy is saying, let it run. Don't stuff it back up. Don't try to take a drying agent during the night so that your sleep doesn't get disturbed.
And be ready for the consequences if you do, which are going to be that that process is not going away.
Yes, and there's actually some evidence now that you'll heal quicker from a common cold if you let the commonness of the cold flow, if you let the symptoms go, and you can always supplement and so forth. But yeah, it's a fascinating piece of this. And I'm curious, though, what about like long-term chronic diseases? Somebody comes to you with arthritis of the spine, arthritis of the ankles, a former dancer or current dancer. Are you for this notion, well, there's nothing you can do? I mean, it's a long-term usage of the body. And I'm sure you get a lot of people who they'll show the x-ray. Oh, I had this at my orthopedist, and he says, I have arthritis in my pelvis, my spine, whatever. How do you look at arthritis, which doesn't say anything in the name other than inflammation of your arth,
which is your joint.
And so, well, how do you look at it?
For me, it's an inflammatory response, and it's based on a poor mechanical usage. And so what we can do is we can shift the mechanics of it. And although we may not be able to rebuild the cartilage, we can help the body find a balance that is not based so much on compensation, and it's not based so much on injury. And we are incredible beings of light and energy, and there is no way that I believe that we are stuck how we are with a diagnosis ever. Mm-hmm. And there are reports of quote unquote remissions of absolutely every illness or every condition in the world. And we don't know what causes that. But I truly believe that it's a moment where the body realizes that it can shift and it can change. And so by being around people who believe that, makes it a lot easier than trying to do it by yourself.
Yeah, and you're on the front lines. You're seeing the effects of that frame as people come to you. That, yeah, there's a kind of spontaneous healing sometimes. There is real work and long-term process and slow relieving and releasing of pain and symptom. Many ways to approach it, many different rhythms. So, Amy, as we're coming down the wire now, how do people get in touch with you?
My website is www.flourishnyc.com.
Spell it.
FLOURISHNYC.com. That has my office hours, my phone number, my email. My email's amy@flourishnyc.com. I'm happy to answer emails. Mm-hmm. My practice is in Midtown Manhattan. I'm on 33rd and Madison. I am there 3 half-days a week because I am also a full-time mom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get to help people shift and change their lives on a part-time basis. Mm-hmm. And I'm incredibly blessed that I get to do both.
Yeah, certainly are. My goodness. And that. So you have taught internationally and you've experienced other cultures. You seem fluent in Italian. Is it fair to say that?
That is fair.
Yeah. So certainly the Spanish language, not too far from there.
I speak pretty good Spanish. I speak good French when there's brie and red wine involved.
Hey.
And my husband was just telling me that I get to add a fourth one, which is that I speak body.
You speak body.
So, and I think that that really comes from my massage background.
Oh, sure. Big chunk of it. And the great training. Did you go to the Swedish Massage Institute?
I didn't. I went to a really holistic massage institute, I think it was called, in Santa Barbara, California, and it was fabulous.
Really?
But I truly believe that either you are born to work with your hands or not, and that there's no amount of training that can replace that.
Hmm.
So a 5,000-hour program may create a great technician, but you're not going to create a great massage therapist if somebody isn't gifted with their hands.
Yeah, I think it probably applies in a lot of areas, the art of teaching. And so many wonderful experts cannot convey what it is they want to convey because that's not where they are, and that's totally fine. And I'm always interested in hands. I think it's not hands, it's being as well, expressing through that modality. That, not to get too esoteric about it, but we raise our boys in this culture to fear touch. Mothers withdraw from their boy children, and that's standard knowledge and proven. Much earlier, little girls get to be touched up through 11 and 12 when they become sexual threats, particularly to the father, but a threat, quote unquote. And guys just don't know what to do. And moms, the dad's constantly saying in the society, make your little boy a man early. Let him feel his pain and don't go in there and console and touch and so forth. A dear friend of mine has also been on this program, Ron Levine, who is a chiropractor. He raised two boys with Fran Parker, and those boys had been touched all through their lives, and they're two walking miracles of creativity, love, all kinds of good stuff. They can annoy the hell out of you, but boy, do they hear you, and do you react with them. It's a wonderful thing. So thanks so much, Amy. I'm wondering if there are any other thoughts you want to tell us, share with us before we sign off.
Well, one of the things that came up when you were talking about the arthritis and is that truly we get in those patterns based on events that occurred as we're young. And so I love adjusting children, and I do adjust a lot of children and babies. And my greatest gift is when one of the pregnant women who I serve in her pregnancy brings me the baby. Sometimes I'll even go to the hospital and adjust the baby in the hospital. And people say, well, what's wrong with the baby? Absolutely nothing. And let's keep it that way. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure that this being of light is as free as possible and as clear as possible. And why would we not want that gift for our children?
Yes.
Some people feel like, I don't want to start going to a chiropractor because I'll have to go my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where that comes from. Because if we start eating healthy, don't we want to eat healthy for our lifetime, or do we just want to go once?
Mm-hmm.
If we start working out, if we start doing yoga, if we start praying, if we start doing anything that makes us feel good and becomes a part of our identity and connecting with ourselves and our world, isn't that something that's worth investing in, whether it's time or money or energy? And don't we want to do that on a regular basis for ourselves and have that be part of our family dynamic? I have couples that come in for date night on Friday night as part of their connecting with each other.
Yes.
And it's awesome.
Awesome. Of course, with your weekly massage, your weekly chiropractic, your dentist, yoga, and it gets busy.
3-day work week.
A 3-day work week. That's the answer. Okay. Amy, thanks so much for coming on. I hope to have you back again and maybe in a little panel of others of same persuasion and see what we come up with. And thank you, Eric Lopez, for the beautiful Champion Fulton music. And we're going to move now on into our week, and we look forward to being in your hearts and ears next week. Virginia Reed, Progressive Radio Network, COMM.net, A Woman's Perspective. Have a great one.
The loneliest man in town. He ain't got rhythm. Every night he sits in the house alone, 'cause he ain't got rhythm. Every night he sits there and wears a frown. He attracted some attention when he found the fourth dimension, but he ain't got rhythm, so no one's with him. He's the loneliest man in town. A lonely man is he, bending over his books. His wife and family keep giving him the dirty look, 'cause he ain't got rhythm. When they call him up, it's to call him down.